Hello, and welcome to the Marketing Times Analytics Podcast. I'm your host, Alex Sofranis, and today we're on with Professor Christian Farioli. Christian, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thank you so much, Alex. And you are one of the very few in the United States that can pronounce my surname correctly. That's a good start.
Thanks.
So just a quick introduction. I've been launching and running digital marketing campaign since the year 2003, which has been 21 years already. And I started with Oracle, the database company. And then across the years, I've been managing and running campaign for a bunch of organizations worldwide. And also, in the last 12 years, I've been also teaching digital marketing. I'm one of the lecturers for the Digital Marketing Institute, Informa, at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and even Ernst & Young.
Wow. So yeah, you're not only educating, you're also operating in the industry. What's the nature of the projects that you've worked on?
I started mostly in B2B, and even now, most of my projects are always around B2B, because I see this has been an industry that I've seen most of the potential, and I was very comfortable with, even though the majority of marketers have been always thinking that digital marketing was not mostly to produce e-commerce, to generate sales, etc. For me, I've been always using it to generate leads, and that's why I've been very familiar with it. And I've been working with absolutely any industry. I start with Oracle, and then I move into real estate. Then as probably some of you can guess from my accent, I'm not from US, I'm from Italy, but I am based in Dubai since 2007. So for the last pretty much 17 years. And in Dubai, I've been running campaign for real estate and for a lot of industries, for hospitality and you name it, for healthcare. We got a lot of clients in healthcare space. Sometimes we consider B2B, sometimes we consider B2C, but mostly again B2B. So running around, I never got the chance to specialize in any specific vertical because I was always a pioneer in the industry. So we got clients asking us for a lot of campaigns or help in an industry, and that's why we got experience in many of them. And actually, I don't believe that there could be only one specialization. In fact, we work a lot with telecom operators, the largest telecom operators here in the Middle East. And then from them, we also apply some of the tactic in other industries. As some of the industry, let's say like healthcare or banking industry, are behind the digitalization. But when you talk about telecom operator, they're ahead. And then we use some of the tactic that works in telco and we apply them to other industry. And we noticed that this got great results. So that's why we continue operating cross industries. Clearly now I have a team of around 30 people, some of them specialize in different sectors, etc. And that's why we continue the journey. But so far I cannot complain. And actually one of the interesting industry that I started working a few years ago, and recently I'm doing even training for them, it's oil and gas. So the major oil and gas producers here in the Middle East. And it's funny because people may think that oil and gas just produce oil. You don't need digital marketing. You don't need any digital activity at all. But in fact, it's not right. Because if you want to stay ahead of the curve and you always want to produce the maximum, etc., you need to be more digital. There are many activities done as well by the largest oil and gas players that need to be promoted. So it's not only about selling oil, but actually create awareness about different type of events or other services that the company may do. So that's why I can say that I struggle to find a sector where we haven't done something.
That's very interesting. Usually you'll see guests have a particular focus. So I think that this in itself is a really valuable thing to explore, is how being a generalist in the marketing space has benefited you. So I'm curious, when you're having these conversations and you're approaching a new client, first of all, is it a lot of referrals? How does the conversation typically go when you're talking about what services you can provide for the client? Are you
right
waiting for them to come to you with what they need, or how do you approach that conversation?
Actually, it's a funny story that, as I say, we're running campaign since the year 2003, and we help every client to get more coverage and more clients, more leads online. But we get most of our clients from word of mouth, which is a little bit of a contradiction, right? The fact is that we are a boutique agency. So I'm not one of those massive agency with million people that they come and go and we treat clients like one after another. So we like to create really strong relationship with our clients because the nature of their business change, the nature of the digital media change. And that's, we like to help them in the full journey. So we have clients that are with us for more than 8 years. And again, that's why I don't need 10 clients a day or anything like that. Still, every now and then, as I post sometime in LinkedIn, some interesting stuff, some results, some training that I do, so we get also clients from it. And the typical approach is that most of the time, the C-level executives, they come to me directly. Because as much as we like to help organization, behind the organization, there are always leaders. And that's what I've been training and educating and getting connected with. And then the leaders, they always have some challenge. They say, look, we're running some campaign, etc. I don't even know if my marketing team is effective. And I don't have the capability to measure it. Because according to the marketing team or the chief of marketing, everything is done perfectly. But according to the real sales, we don't see results. So I don't know what to do. And that's why we come and we do also a strategic consulting approach, where we do even an assessment, a digital audit to the current activities. We're not gonna blame anyone. We're not gonna go there with the stick to beat the current marketing team. We do actually an X-ray. So like when you have a problem, you have a pain, you go to the doctor. If visually you don't see where the pain comes from, you need to do an X-ray. And that's exactly what we do. And we've done it even for huge major brands, not only located to one country or two or three, we've done even at global scale. And then after the digital audit is done, then we can come back to the organization and discuss together where the company stands and where the company should be, let's say like in 1, 2, or 3 years. And based on that, we identify the gaps in their digital marketing activity, digital marketing strategy, etc. And then we prepare a set of actions. And then after the set of action, we prioritize those actions. We call it the quick wins. That basically that can give, that can improve the organization within the next 3 months. And then we offer the full digital marketing roadmap with budget, etc., etc. Now, it's up to the client to decide. If they have the resources to do it in-house, they're gonna do it all. For us, it's absolutely okay. In some time, some clients, they don't have some of the resources. And we can help them either helping them find the right resources or supplying some of the services ourselves, because I'm running an agency for many years, so we have a lot of talents. At the same time, in some cases, there are also medium-sized companies that they don't even like to manage a team. And what we do, we offer a full outsourcing solution, where actually they don't need to do absolutely nothing. They get a dedicated account manager, they get a full-fledged digital marketing team, and then on a monthly basis, we sit down to have reviews with them. And that's it. That's how we work with all of our clients, basically, since now.
Mm-hmm. I love that. That's very interesting. And you phrase it really clearly. So I have a feeling that sales is a big part of your role in that relationship building, being that like main point of contact.
Actually, yes. That's why I'm a little bit reluctant to scale up too much my agency, because I'm the one that create always the connection in first place. And on a monthly basis, I'm the one having the review meeting with the clients. And I'm talking about with the C-level executive of the clients, typically with CEOs or chief marketing officers. And that's why I need to be always involved with it.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, when you're doing this X-ray, when you're doing an audit for a company's performance, how do you determine that ideal marketing setup? How do you determine, for instance, what the right channels are for a business to be running media on?
That's also another great question, since the majority of the clients are not putting too much focus on doing the homework ahead. They mostly go full blast with specific channels because they've heard from somebody, their friends is doing it, their competitor is doing it, and so they're not focusing much, they're not spending enough time into planning the target audience. The target audience or the online persona is something that needs to be done very carefully. Otherwise, you're just gonna do what everyone else is doing, and then you're gonna get poor results or average results. But even with an average results, it's just about time that the results are only gonna go down because the competition is gonna be fierce. When I started, I was running mostly pay-per-click Google PPC, for search for every possible client, because that was the only solution. That was even way before social media. And that was easy, because back in the days, nobody was doing even Google Ads. And every click was costing me 1 cent of dollar per click. No matter what the country, no matter what the keyword, nothing. The funny thing is that it was very difficult for me. I was struggling explaining clients that they need to do it. But actually, everyone was thinking, Google is free. Everyone is selling SEO, so why should I pay Google advertising? I don't understand these things. And it took me actually a lot of years to finally make an impact and make everyone understand that it's only by pushing your brand, by having some traffic directed to your website, that you can achieve something. That was, I'm talking about long, long time ago. Right now, everyone is doing a little bit of Google, a little bit of social media, a little bit of TikTok or a few other platform, and basically, it's not gonna change much. Now, B2C, the smart one are doing funnels, but again, even funnel is not always working, because again, sometimes it's missing some work ahead. And that's why I created my own strategy, and that's based on that I rate the efforts of any clients. And the strategy that I've created it since I've done it 15 years ago, I'm using it even now. And I can tell you that 10 years from now, it's still gonna work perfectly and includes every possible things that's every possible gimmicks that any crazy marketer has ever created until now. Just to give an example, when we talk about traffic source, everyone is again is using 3, 4, 5, maybe 7, maybe 10 tactic to get traffic. We count so far more than 1,500 tactics. So you can imagine that if you're doing Google and social media, you're doing exactly what every other company in the planet is doing it. From the very little startup to the massive corporate, they're all doing a bunch of same tactic. And the attention gets stolen by the most interesting product. Because if you are a B2B industry, most of the time you are a boring industry. You're not so fancy like a restaurant, like an amazing resort in an amazing island, etc. So the attention is not gonna go to you. So you need to work a lot harder to get the attention from the exact precise people that potentially are gonna buy your service. Again, when we talk about B2B, you're talking about decision makers. You're talking about board of directors, C-level, or investors. That's the difficult part. That's why we need to do the X-ray, let's say, with a very high resolution. Otherwise, it's not gonna come out the real problem behind the not right goals or behind the poor performance of the digital marketing activities of an organization.
That's very interesting. I'm so curious, what are some examples of tactics that you're using that are quite unique? Is it like different influencers that have their own audiences that you're tapping into, or different email lists? What are some examples of where you're going that others aren't tapping into?
I can give you the idea of the five pillars of my digital marketing strategy. So the first one is traffic, because without traffic, you don't go anywhere. Then the second are your windows. Your windows means where are your clients discovering your products and services. So you don't only have your website. Every social media page, technically, it's a space where customer can find your products and they can connect with you, or they can even call you directly. They can even ask you or generate a lead out of every single social network. Then you maybe get inside into different portals or digital PR. If you have articles written in professional magazines from your sectors, they can also generate leads if they're written with aggressive, persuasive copywriting techniques. And you can have aggregators. If you are supplying a machinery of a special type, then again, your company can appear, or your products can appear on an aggregator website. All of these basically are all of your windows. After that, just because you have a website or you are showcasing your products somewhere, doesn't mean that you are generating leads. Because statistically, when I see thousands of analytics platforms and from a lot of clients, I always see the same performance. That when you're lucky, 1-3% of the traffic become a lead, which means that 97% of the time, the client is wasting their money into driving traffic to their website and not generating leads. The reason that they're generating low level leads is because they don't have a sales system in place. The sales system is what converts traffic into leads or into customers, including the nurturing. Because even when a lead is generated and the sales team is calling the lead is gonna left around and it's not gonna be just enough. So you also need to keep nurturing the lead because it's gonna take some time to close a deal. That's why there is a period of time that for B2B, it can go from a minimum of 2 weeks up to even 6 months or even more. And during all this time, the sales agents cannot only or constantly stay in contact with the client every single day. You need to have a system that keep your company, your brand, your product on top of the mind of the clients. And again, it's all part of the sales system. Until finally, the sales is generated. When the sales is generating, happy, we created the revenue, we have ROI, everyone is happy. But the real marketer should not be happy because that's not the end point. Once you get a client, that's just the start. Then the next step is to create loyalty. Especially if you are talking about B2B, then you need to make sure that the client is gonna stay loyal with you for a very long time. Because to acquire a new client is always a very expensive process and very heavily time consuming. But after the client is onboarded and again is keep receiving a certain amount of input from your company, then it's gonna stay loyal for much longer time. And some of them, aside of staying loyal, they also become advocates. So they will talk with their friends. We know in marketing that word of mouth has been always the most powerful marketing tactic, but it's impossible to forecast how it's gonna work. So the best you can do is to push a little bit word of mouth on the digital side. So if you convince the client to leave a video testimonial, a video review, or just a review, just some line, or even a comment in social media, anything that make the voice of the customer speak and stand out, then again, it's gonna create loyal advocacy. And that's what's gonna bring you very healthy and wealthy clients that are not gonna ask you 1 million information before doing business with you. They're just gonna come with you because they are sure that you're gonna help them, that you're gonna solve their problem. And that's the fourth pillar, which is loyalty and advocacy. The fifth pillar, for me, the most important of everything, is the one that keeps everyone else together, which is analytics. And I know that is also one of your best topics, Alex, is the reason that a campaign is working. Because when we talk about digital marketing, even when we talk about marketing, nobody can absolutely guarantee you 100% that what they're doing is gonna absolutely works. Nobody, including the largest marketing agency or marketing group. And I've been teaching the majority of them, including even Leo Barnett and many others. But what we can do at least, and what even my gurus and the people that I learned from so many years ago explain, is that failing in digital is very cheap. And that's absolutely was a breakthrough for me, because I say, I'm an IT engineer. Things need to be done perfectly. You cannot think that you're gonna miss. That doesn't exist. But in marketing, nobody knows the truth. Nobody knows what's gonna work. You do your best, putting all of your experience, but again, you don't know if this is gonna be the most effective solution or there's gonna be something else. But the beauty, analyzing data, analyzing KPI and the return of investment of every single activity, then you can figure out what was working and what's not. And if it doesn't, again, you don't need to wait 6 months to decide to change direction. After literally 1 week or even few days, you know exactly if something is working as expecting or not. And you can always adjust. So that's basically is the right approach. Then there are many methodology, do a constant optimization phase, tweaking, etc., etc. There is a North Star KPI methodology and many others that are typically used by successful startups that they help exactly doing that. Testing it on a weekly basis, new activity, new changes, new adjustment, even changing a call to action. I've done it sometime with some company that we've been working with, and we got crazy results. We keep increasing week after week the performance and the conversion of our funnel. And then we reached the point that, looking at the competition, a typical bank spend around $300 to acquire a new customer, averagely. A good fintech, it's in the range of $100, $90 to $100. By keep pushing this forward, we managed to bring the cost per acquisition down to less than $1. before even launching the company. So we were building up a wait list without even having a company. Now you can imagine that you can reach these results by constantly optimizing your, not only your funnel, but all of your activities. That's why I say at the beginning that the funnel, it's a great idea that I discovered it in 2010. So now it's been 14 years ago. Now you need to consider the full digital customer journey, from what the customer have in his mind, who the customer is, what they're gonna do to fix their problem, their issue, or to get better in what they are trying to achieve, to accomplish. And based on that, you prepare the full roadmap of activity that's gonna basically take them by hands from the beginning, and it's gonna keep them forever. A good client, you're never gonna leave his end. You're gonna always keep his end because you always wanna do better for him. And he always gonna stay with you and do whatever you say. That's why I remember so many years ago that once we were doing a campaign, etc., we were explaining the clients what we were doing. And the client, after some time, they say, look, I still don't understand what you're doing, but keep doing it because it's working very well. Mm-hmm. And even a few months later, they were saying, look, there is something else that maybe you are not telling me because I don't understand, but it could work even more on our company. If there is any other activity, please do that. Do like it's your own company. Because again, they recognize after some time that it's not their expertise to understand the full digital marketing gimmicks, etc., etc. Even a chief of marketing that with a lot of years experience, typically they come out with the voice of the customer, with their own research, etc., etc., but is not equipped to run a digital marketing campaign. And at the same time, just because you get a social media manager, an SEO manager, an SEM manager, doesn't mean that they're gonna tell you how to run your business. If you're the CEO, you are the one deciding how to run your business. So you're the one that should give a digital direction. But I know that is not easy. So that's why we help you with it. And then with some clients, we offer as well some hours per month of what we call it a chief digital officer on demand. So we give you some time where you can really understand what's going on, and we plan the activities with you. Because as I always say, nobody knows your company, your product, and your services better than yourself. If you think that an external agency is gonna know more, I'm the first one telling you, no, your product, your service is better than yourself and better than anyone else. But what we know are your clients, because your clients are not only your clients, are people, are human. And we understand very well how to change the mind of somebody in order to convince them to buy your stuff. So that's basically the full game. So just to recap for you, Alex, and for your audience, the five pillars of the perfect digital marketing strategy, which I developed 15 years ago and I'm still using now, and it's gonna work for another 10 years at least, are five. So the first one is traffic, then there are your windows, then there is the sales system, then there is loyalty and advocacy, and then the fifth one is analytics. So the proper way to measure the KPI and to understand the ROI of every single activity running in your digital marketing strategy.
I love that. Thank you so much for breaking that down. I'm curious, when you're going into understanding the people, the customers that businesses have, what are the ways that you actually learn about that? Are you doing interviews with the customers? Are you buying data that tells you about their buying habits? What do you actually do to get that information?
We have done a lot of research. We have done our own experiments, even on my own companies, because the digital marketing agency is just one of my company. I have many others. And in the others, I've been experimenting heavily all of my life and see what works and what doesn't. At the same time, by the fact that I'm one of the lecturers for the Digital Marketing Institute, I got access to some material that is the latest, most updated material on digital marketing ever, that has been created by the leaders of digital marketing globally from the largest organization. So all of the lecturers of Digital Marketing Institute are professionals with practical experience in their own topic. And they also help creating the best strategy and the best material ever. So this is basically a help for me. But at the same time, I've been always passionate about customer needs. So when I speak with somebody and I think, okay, you are a CEO, who are you? How you spend your time? How you spend your day? We all know that everyone has a Facebook account, but right now, how many, let's say, B2B clients or CEOs are spending time in Facebook and how much time they're spending in it? Definitely not much. Because if you need to run a huge organization, you don't have all the time, like maybe a receptionist that when nobody calls, the receptionist easily on Facebook, on Instagram all day, no problem. Now, if you're a busy business person, you don't have the time. So that's why you cannot expect that by doing an ads in Meta, you're gonna get any results. Now, maybe I can do a remarketing, a retargeting ads, just to get those people that has been already visiting my website, and I wanna make sure that if they go on social network, they see me again, and I stay on top of their mind. But for me, it's very simple. If you're targeting B2B, the channels, the number one channel is LinkedIn, but again, forget about doing LinkedIn ads. LinkedIn ads are so outdated and nobody's noticing even that. I'm struggling to understand why LinkedIn is not figuring out that's not the right way to advertise. And it's easy, it shows up that clients, they get very little out of it. And then clearly, every businessman, what they open? Emails. Now, which means that you cannot spam him, especially if you're based in the United States, or even worse, if you're based in Europe, GDPR, it's a very serious things. You cannot just send unsolicited email to CEOs saying, hey, let's have a chat. I want to advise you. I want to do something for you. It's going to be very bad. You get few flag of spam and you risk big fines. So you need to do carefully. But there are, again, ways to reach the email, the inbox of C-level executives. And then as well, Google, because at the end of the day, every executive, they are always searching for stuff. And if we're really clear in what and how we can help our clients, our target audience, then we focus on those specific keywords. Not when somebody is already aware and they are searching for the name of the product or stuff like this. Obviously, they could help. Or if they are looking for a competitor company and we target the competitor keywords, which actually, they are just damaging the reputation of our account. But there are other tactics to achieve that, even if you want to target the competitor keywords without damaging the reputation. This is just some of the example. But again, my game is always to spend a lot more time on thinking and discussing with our clients who are their perfect clients as of now. Who are them? Again, and always when people say, but we're not selling to consumer, we sell to businesses. At the end of the day, what is a business? A business is a decision maker working for an organization. So you're not technically selling to an organization. You're not persuading an organization. You're persuading a person, which could be a CEO, could be the purchasing, the chief of purchasing, or the purchasing department, or the IT manager, the CTO of the organization, the chief sustainability officer, or whatever it is that you're selling. So at the end of the day, it's always an individual. So that's why for me, it's been always easy since I started my career in my sales career in Oracle, and I was selling to technical people, to IT manager, to database administrator, etc., etc. So I realized that at the end of the day, it's just another type of communication. I'm not selling pizzas on the street, I'm selling expensive services to business professionals. But again, it's another sale, it's another human interaction. And once the marketers realize that, then they can understand better how to persuade those individuals. Because the big gap that I notice in any marketing department is that marketing people, they are very good, they studied a lot, they went to the best master in marketing, but 10% of them, they never physically sold anything. When I say sold, I mean face to face. Have you ever sold a pair of shoes, a coat, or service yourself? Because once you understand how the sales dynamic works, then you understand that the entire marketing things, it doesn't work anymore. It used to be perfect in the 70s, in the 60s, in the 80s, in the 90s, even in the year 2000. But now we are in 2024, so we are heavily digitalized. Even our kids are born digital, and they understand the market in a completely different way. So everyone now recognizes that marketing is just advertising. And we know that nobody likes advertising, right? Actually, my kids, since when they were 2 years old, they were able to skip ads. So you can imagine, they don't know what is advertising. They don't even know how to read or write or even speak when they were 2 years old. But they recognize that this advertising was bad. And when the little number was changing in YouTube, they were clicking and skipping the ads. So this, again, to reiterate that in my vision, the future of marketing department is shifting completely into producing content. And when I say producing content, doesn't mean producing marketing content. I mean producing real content, engaging content, people that they want to see your content, they want to understand what you're doing, what's in it for me, not what can you sell in to me. Don't sell me the products or the benefits. Just entertain me and explain me why I should do this. So give me value in your content, not just a big marketing material or a long sales letter selling you stuff. Really give me value. And if you give me enough value, I eventually decide to give you my email, my address, or to contact you or to book a meeting with you. So that's what I noticed, that B2B organizations are still not yet there. It's gonna still take some time. But again, I noticed I've been doing crazy stuff all of my life, at least a decade before everyone else. So I understand it's gonna take still some time for the big organization to understand that. Even more because marketing departments are managed by very experienced marketers, which unfortunately they are already a little bit old and they haven't seen that. So why does the startup, they grow so much faster? Because they are made by very young individuals that they didn't went through the big marketing learning process. They don't know marketing. And that is what is saving them from doing the wrong things. And from the beginning, they do what they think it works, but especially they are not afraid to try. They try. That's why we see that the richest people, for example, in crypto, are youngsters, not adults. Every adult has a big portfolio, has a big wallet, has a big bank account that could have been invested in so many crypto. But why they're not doing it? Because the crypto sounds too different. Sounds, no, this is risky, no, I don't understand how it works, this is not gonna work, etc., etc. The youngster, he only has $1,000 in his account, and what he do? All in, $1,000 on Ethereum, on something else, on Dogecoin, etc., etc. And some of them, boom, they blast. So again, marketing department need to also understand and learn from the youngster. The idea is that they don't need to change what they're doing. They simply need to hire younger individuals to do what they know how to do best. I'm not gonna tell a 20 years old kid how he should do his YouTube video, his TikTok video. Absolutely not. He's the one that should tell me how we should do the TikTok video for the company. And I should say, as much as it sounds totally crazy, some part of my mind will say, I'm never gonna do it. The other part of my mind must say, you are the expert, so you're gonna do it your way. And then, of course, thanks to analytics, measuring results, measuring data, what works, what doesn't, and even give a little bit of idea about what maybe, basically, the brainstorming session could be always done by everyone in the organization. But again, the last word should be always for the young expert in that specific topic. If it's TikTok, if it's pay-per-click, if it's SEO, if it's whatever tactic your company is thinking to use. So that is, in my opinion, the biggest advice that I give everyone, because I do a lot of meetings with startup, very smart, very sharp, very hands-on, and with a huge corporate, including Fortune 500, which they like to do things their way, the safe way. But right now, unfortunately, there is not anymore the safe way. There is the growing and scale up way, or the stagnant and risking to go down anytime soon way. So I hope that it makes sense, and I hope that if there is a little bit older marketer out there, he's gonna listen, and even if he's not gonna mention in the comments you're right or not, at least listen a little bit more to the younger generation. Hire more youngster, because they're the one that they know how those digital channel works, since the majority of them, they were born digital already. They were digital native. not like us that we had to learn and we became digital. So they're the one that should tell us the way.
I love that approach. I'm curious, you said content is really the future of what to focus on and providing that value. What are some of the things that we're moving away from? What are some of the more outdated marketing or advertising concepts or tactics that you think are maybe that safer profile of what you were describing, but aren't as effective as they once were?
Actually, for me, the word marketing itself, it's a little bit outdated. When marketing start pushing up, it becomes the cool things. And what was the outdated things? Advertising. Advertising is old, the future is marketing. Now, unfortunately, guys, marketing is old. And the future is becoming a publisher. That's the idea. No, but I don't understand, no, I don't wanna do stupid video. It's not about doing stupid video. It's about becoming a publisher. I publish a few books, which means that you're not gonna buy one of my book and read 450 pages of advertising for myself. You are reading 450 pages of content, good for you. And that's the idea, that any organization should have content good for their readers, their watchers, good for their target audience. And eventually, they're gonna like the content and they decided to do business with you. So that's the big things. At the same time, I believe that any organization can become more a personal brand. Even when you talk about the huge organization, every senior executive should be a personal brand. And again, this is not the job of traditional marketing department. This is a job of what, in my opinion, they should be in every organization, which is the personal branding department. So a department taking care about every single senior executive in the organization. If you are on TV, there is the makeup department. You're not gonna go on TV like that. There is the makeup department, they make you makeup, they fix your hair, they maybe change your clothes, make sure that your dress is clean, and then you can go live. So organization should have a personal branding department that is taking care every single minute of every single and possible activities from their leaders. Again, it's not the CEO job to post in LinkedIn, but it's the personal branding department jobs to prepare the post with the voice of the CEO to be ready to be posted. In a way that the CEO should only say, read it 1 second and say yes, and the post go live. There is a video, yes, and go live. Or even shoot some video about the CEO, the chairman, managing director, all of the boards, even the chief of marketing, even the HR, everyone should be a public figure in an organization. And then again, when you talk about international organization, obviously they have departments in every country, they have a senior leader in every country, and in every country you will find a different leader saying something else. Because if I say something in Italy, in Italian, obviously it's gonna be completely different than the message that goes on in the United States, in the US branch. Even the way to communicate is a little bit different in some country compared to others. And that's why, in my opinion, this is one of the departments that I have not seen it yet, but I write it down as I've been forecasting so many things at least a decade before. Sooner or later, organizations are gonna have their personal branding department.
That makes a lot of sense. And I'm curious how you see internal versus external influencers playing into this. So this personal branding department is more for internal, for executives, and as a representative of the company, but how does that work with external influencers? Are you similarly optimistic about them?
I believe that if you are good as an internal, you're gonna be the internal influencer. If in your company there is nobody that can even think to become an influencer, or then they don't have the attitude, they don't have the skills, and don't even wanna learn how to become one, you have to take external influencers. And external influencers, as much as they say that your product is good, 2 minutes later, they say that your competitor product is good and your counterpart product is good. And maybe 1 month later, they say that you are not good anymore because you've done something wrong, and then you say that you're not good anymore. So that's the issue. But of course, issues that are everywhere, even your own employee, if you become a personal brand, become an influencer, your competitor can decide to take it on his side. not because it's good, but because it got a lot of followers. And we know very well that followers are worth a lot more than revenue. But it's a risk. I mean, if your company treat your employee, including your influencer employees, well, then they're gonna stay with you forever. But if they get better offer from somebody else, it's because you don't value them enough. They give you massive value, and there are many ways to measure how effective or how much an influencer is really worth for you. And if you don't give them the retribution that they deserve, of course they can evaluate to go somewhere else. But again, if we take the fashion industry, for example, and I come from Milan in Italy, the capital of fashion, we know very well that every major fashion brands, they have a lot of brand ambassadors. Now, online, you call them influencers, but this is something that exists for decades, way before the invention of social media. The Italian brands, they were having brand ambassadors wearing their clothes in the red carpet, in the Cannes Movie Film Festival, in the advertising, in every major events, there are actors, the most famous actors, which they wear fashion dress. And why they wear fashion dress? Because that specific brand, because they got paid for it. They are a brand ambassador. So that's clear and simple. And again, today they wear maybe Armani, tomorrow they wear Dolce & Gabbana, because they got paid more. That's simple. The same way, why Cristiano Ronaldo wear the hat from maybe Nike and the next day Adidas or something like this? That's the same thing. I mean, you choose to be on the head of the best, but if next year somebody else pay him more, you're out of the game. Very simple. So we don't need to think that, oh, but if I give too much to my employee, he's gonna leave me. I've heard the same even about the training. Oh, if I teach my employees too much about digital marketing, if I give them the best training ever, they're gonna learn, they're gonna pretend a bigger salary, and then they're gonna leave and work for somebody else. Again, which means that the system is broken. It's not that you are doing the wrong things by giving good training to your employees. You should give them the best, so they are never gonna leave you. But clearly, if they do a bigger job, if they produce a lot more, if your revenue increases significantly because of them, you should reward them. You should give them an increase in salary and recognition. That's why they stay loyal with you for a long time. So you nurture their mind and you nurture their wallet. And that's why they're gonna stay with you. And I've done actually many training, even on something that I call it social selling, which is how to teach a sales team how to become more social and sell and generate leads from social network, which is something completely different than just the social media marketing. Because social media marketing, as the word say, it's a task, a tool, a job for marketing department. But when we talk about social selling, it's a tool for salespeople, for sales force. And again, you understand that as a human, as a salesperson, your job can be amplified on the social network. But again, on your personal social network. So you're not gonna post how amazing is my product, how amazing my customer are so satisfied, how I'm drinking Coca-Cola so nice, so amazingly, or stuff like this. That's called marketing advertising, and it's done by marketing team, advertising team. If you are a salesperson, you need to do social selling. So the post good for a salesperson. And what you're gonna get in return? Your company most probably is not gonna pay you to post every now and then in your social. But every now and then, you're already posting in your social, because when you go out to a nice fancy restaurant with your wife, sometime you take the picture of the food or your wife or the holiday. And in your holiday, there is in the backside the resort. The resort is not paying you money. When you see a Ferrari or a Lamborghini and you take a picture, or a Pagani and you take a picture, and you are posting in all of your social, you're making a big advertising of Ferrari, Lamborghini, and Pagani. But they're not gonna pay you anything. But you're doing it because they are a super brand that people love so much, and you wanna be associated with this type of brand. And in the same way, when people go to work for Google, the first things that they do is updating their LinkedIn headline. I work for Google. On the very first day, as soon as you join, boom, immediately. But how is that possible that when you join any other company, then you wait 3 months to update your LinkedIn? Only if they confirm you, if you get confirmed, then you update your LinkedIn. So that's for the same reason, because you don't love the company so much as Google employee love Google, because they give them freedom, they give them recognition, they give them money, a lot of other things. So it's the same way, the same things that we give externally value to our customer, if we give internally value to our employees, not only they're gonna work harder, but they're eventually gonna post more on their social network. So I hope that makes sense, since I'm giving away a lot of things, that I'm planting a lot of seeds in each one of your mind to make sure that a few years from now, those seeds, they become flowers and you start recognizing. Now it makes sense to have something like this. And finally, you're gonna be able to propose to your department to have, for example, an internal influencer team, an internal social selling team, an internal personal branding team.
I love that. Yeah, and this all makes a lot of sense, and I definitely think you have a very clear vision about where marketing is going in the future. And you said something a couple topics ago that I want to go back to, which is around GDPR and the importance of marketers understanding laws around contacting prospects and around advertising campaigns. Do you think that as a marketing educator, that law will be increasingly important in a well-rounded marketer's education journey? And will that increase over time, the need for that kind of education for marketers?
I personally believe that technology should take care of the safety of data, et cetera, not the user. And unfortunately, now there is a massive time wasted by every single user in the planet by clicking the message of yes, I agree with cookie, no, I don't agree with cookie, yes, track all of this, yes, I wanna track it, no, I don't wanna track it, track this, not track that, track this, track that. And every time you receive an email, now it's been 1 year, now we need to re-opt-in to the email in order to stay on, and so on and on. So all of this kind of, let's call it safety systems to protect the customer data, they are killing the world economy. If we think how many hours every month every single user need to spend by going through all of these things, it's absolutely crazy. And at the same time, by limited or making an extremely ultra hardcore, totally safe privacy in your device, what's gonna happen? That advertiser, they cannot target anymore the right customer. And that's a problem, because if now I open my social media or my Google or something, and I get messages from companies that potentially I may be interested, very soon, and this is already going away and it's getting stronger and stronger, I'm gonna get messages from every single type of advertiser, because my data is so secure, the advertiser, the platform, they know absolutely nothing about me. So what's gonna happen? I'm gonna see messages totally random. And this reminds me at the beginning of the web, where the first search engines, I'm talking about AltaVista and Lycos, if somebody's a little bit older here in the podcast, they remember what I'm talking about. When was back in the days, all of those new platform portals, they start getting full of porn advertising, because the porn industry realized that this was the best. Nobody understood digital marketing except porn industry. Again, if we remove all of the data from consumers, every type of advertiser is gonna shoot their advertising everywhere without knowing which kind of person are you getting. And advertisers are gonna stop advertising, are gonna reduce the advertising budget. Because if I'm selling a car, and I don't know, if you are at least 18 years old to drive a car, how can I advertise? How can I put my ads? This is like going backwards in time, where you do an advertising on the road or on a big street, hoping that people that they watch the advertising are gonna be at least 18 years old to potentially buy the car. So if we take all of the data away, again, you're gonna get advertising from topics that are not for you. You are a man and you're gonna see advertising of high-heeled shoes. You are a woman and advertising of go to the pub and watch the football match with the friends. Again, that's just basically gonna be visual dust, visual dirt, instead of target focus, laser target advertising. And so I will see messages and advertising from digital marketing softwares, and I'm just happy about it. I'm so happy about it. That's why I don't opt out for the cookie things, and I don't put ad blocker or crazy stuff like this, because I like that the platform knows me so much that they show me what is good for me. And that's basically similar with artificial intelligence. The more artificial intelligence knows about you, the more it's gonna answer to your question in a way that you're gonna understand and you're gonna like. Imagine to take all of this data away. I ask something and AI doesn't know if I'm a 5 years old kid or I'm a 60 years old PhD in astrophysics. No idea. Just gonna give me a bland general answer. So the same thing is internet. That's why for me, GDPR and privacy and all of those things are definitely very important, but it's a subject that should be addressed by technologists, not by politicians. Because politicians are using it as a weapon to drive audience on their side. Just by saying, look how bad it is, the data, they are stealing your data, they are selling your data, you need to do something, yeah, let's gonna fight. But this doesn't give you any benefit at all. Simply, you're gonna say, yeah, let's fight, nothing. The final result, you're gonna have to click every single time, every single day, in every single website, if you like or not like the cookie, not cookie, the data, not data, and this and that, and this and that. That's terrible. That's definitely, we are going backwards. That's my point of view of GDPR. Clearly, there are a lot of people that they do their job great in Europe, in the United States, even in the Middle East, and in every country, but they should be more technologists leading the conversation instead of politicians. That's my view.
I love that. I think that's a great note to end on. This has been such an educational conversation, and I want to thank you again, Christian, for coming on. This has been great.
You're welcome, Alex. Have a lovely day, and I believe that every great organization needs a great digital marketing strategy to succeed nowadays.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. And thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you soon.